Radio Prague News.
The centre-right government of Prime Minister Petr Nečas faces a confidence vote in the lower house on Friday evening. Czech radio will launch a new station later in 2012. The head of Šumava National Park, Jan Stráský, has won this year's Ropák Anti-Award. The centre-right government of Prime Minister Petr Nečas faces a confidence vote in the lower house on Friday evening. The vote was called by the Prime Minister to test support for his government after the splintering of the smallest coalition partner, Public Affairs, over a corruption scandal. The future of the government now depends on support from a newly emerged faction around Deputy Prime Minister Karolina Pík, who defected from Public Affairs, and a number of independent deputies. Observers say the government is likely to pass Friday's confidence vote, but predict it will prove harder to find support for its reforms. In related news, trade union representatives and activists from the Stop Vládě, or Stop the Government movement, agreed on Friday on additional protests against the country's centre-right government, which would build up to a strike at the end of June. Jaroslav Zavagil, the head of the trade union's umbrella organization ČEMKOS, revealed the news but declined to provide additional details concerning different protest events. He did say that members of both camps would prepare a new coordination center to prepare activities. Earlier this week, union representatives warned the government that the next protests would hurt. Czech radio will launch a new largely spoken word station later in 2012, merging three stations, Leonardo, Radio Česko and Czech Radio 6 in one. The move is in part reaction to a drop in listenership and will be accompanied by restructuring at Czech radio that will also lead to layoffs. A projected 15-20% of employees, one-fifth, will be let go over the next 2 years, the head of Czech radio Petr Duhan confirmed. The new station, operatively being called Czech Radio 4, will be launched either on the 1st of November or December of this year. Ecological activists from Friends of the Earth have awarded Jan Stráský, the head of Šumava National Park, this year's Ropák Anti-Award for most damaging environmental policies. The organization said they had chosen from among 24 candidates that also included Prague's chief hygiene officer, the environment minister and the country's president, but Mr. Stráský's name came up the most. The activists slammed him for allegedly damaging the good name of the national park and for taking questionable steps in care which they argued had hurt the local ecosystem. They also criticized his calling in the police during past activist protests. The national park head countered by saying that the charges contained many inaccuracies. He stressed that if he had upset the group, he had probably done something right. The Ropák Anti-Award takes its name from a fictional creature that survives on industrial waste, an animal that was invented by Czech filmmaker Jan Svěrák. Turning to sport, legendary jockey Josef Váňa is recovering from an operation after breaking his leg on Thursday in a fall in training. According to doctors, the racer, who has won the Pardubice steeplechase 8 times, should take at least a half-year break. But on Friday, on a Czech website, the jockey himself said he hoped to be back in the saddle within a month at the latest. On Thursday, Mr. Váňa was thrown by a mare known as Dancing Babe, a more problematic horse in his stable, the website IDNES noted. Finally, a quick look at the weather. The weekend is expected to see unseasonably hot conditions with clear skies. Daytime highs should reach 28 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Fellinger. That's the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, as the government seeks a new mandate from Parliament, we talk with political scientist Vladimíra Dvořáková about how stability can finally be achieved. After that, a rundown of the news from the week in business and economics. And in today's feature, arts, we'll hear from Pavel Šporcel, not just your everyday violin virtuoso. I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. Addressing the lower house ahead of a confidence vote in his centre-right government on Friday, Prime Minister Petr Nečas asked deputies for support in the interest of pressing ahead with key reforms, which would lead to stability and prosperity in the future. Professor Vladimíra Dvořáková says that before this objective can be achieved by this government or any other, the country will need to deal with its biggest problem, corruption and a lack of political ethics.
I think that the biggest problem of the reforms is the way how they are done. There can be an agreement about that we do need reforms dealing with the pensions, with the educational system, with many other things, health care. That's quite clear, but the logic of how the reforms are done here is very often influenced by corruption. That means inside the reform, inside the proposal, you can find something that you can be sure that this will be the part from which you can take money. Someone will take money and use the money. That means it's not to make something more effective, but the logic of the reform is, and it's paid by common people, but the logic of the reform is who will control the funds.
Given what you've said, though, it would be almost impossible to press ahead with reforms or to continue the process. Are you totally pessimistic?
Well, I think that there is necessary to be changed. We are somehow in the situation when corruption really is like a cancer that totally destroys the working of the state. It's very difficult to describe that, but we can see that there are ministries that really do not work, that you have no professional servants, or that the state is taking decisions that are unpredictable. And this is something that makes a big problem, not only for common people, but more it makes problem for the people who are entrepreneurs, for businessmen. I have chance to speak to many people from big business that are working very hard, having their firms, business, and they are rather successful. And they are telling me, you know, I will leave the country. That's not possible to be here and to work here. And this is a problem, but it is also about the fact that people are watching the government and they see each 2 weeks conflicts in which one part of the members of the cabinet are saying about the other part of the members of the cabinet, they are criminals. Can you trust in such a cabinet, and can you trust that the reforms are really good? There is a change of about half of the members of the cabinet during half year, and most of the cases were connected with corruption.
It seems that people have lost trust in politicians in general. What is the solution to this problem?
Accountability. This is a question not whether we have a vote of confidence or no confidence. New elections can be part of the solution, but I don't believe that new politicians can change the situation. There is to be really a pressure from below. We can see now many activists of NGOs, many activists of civil society and people. It's necessary to have a really strong pressure to change the institutions and to control the way how the institutions are changed, to have independent, professional, unpoliticized civil service. And it's a long-run process. You know, I don't believe that there will be new elections and there will be no corruption scandals and so on. But it's necessary to say there are limits.
That was political scientist Vladimira Dvořáková talking to Daniela Lazarová. This is Radio Prague, and we stay with Daniela now for a rundown of the week's business news.
The Czech Republic has won a 500 million crown arbitration case against the British company BCD over the toxic cleanup of the Czech company Spolana. According to the Daily Hospodářské Noviny, BCD lost its contract to clean contaminated parts of Spolana after installing its own cleaning technology in the plant and used its own original procedure to clean up the area. After 2 years of disputes, BCDCZ filed an arbitration complaint against the Czech state in 2010. It claimed the finance ministry had failed to pay it 300 million and it also wanted 180 million in compensation for its technologies in the Spolana plant. The arbitration verdict turned down all of BCDCZ's complaints. The company has reportedly not filed a protest against the decision.
The agricultural and industrial tires producer Midas opened its first plant in the United States this week. The Charles City, Iowa plant is set to take on around 150 employees this year, producing Midas and Continental brand agricultural tires of the designed for the North American market. By the end of 2013, the plant plans to have 237 employees and a production capacity of 13,500 tons of tires a year. Midas is one of the leading European producers of agricultural tires, with every fourth tractor and combine harvester produced in Europe using its products. Chief Executive Jaroslav Čechura said that in America, Midas wants to lean on its established suppliers from the Czech Republic and Slovakia and help them open the door to this market. If they can succeed overseas, he said, so can others.
The largest Czech automobile manufacturer Škoda Auto raised its first quarter profit by 11.8% year-on-year to 5.2 billion crowns, according to the business results published by the Volkswagen Group. Škoda sold 206,000 cars in the January-March period, an annual increase of 13.9%, but supplied nearly 243,000 cars to the market, which includes orders from last year. Demand for Fabia, Yeti and Octavia models, as well as for the Rapid in India, was encouraging, said the parent group. The operating profit of Volkswagen overall grew by 10.2% in the first quarter, better than analysts had expected, thanks to record sales.
The Energy Regulatory Office is preparing to halt its support for new renewable energy sources as of the year 2014. The current level of support is beyond the means of the Czech economy, the office reported this week. The change will apply to new sources put into operation after 2014 and will not concern existing renewable sources and those set to be launched by the end of 2013. Should indeed support be halted in 2014, the costs of renewable sources will amount to 874.3 billion by 2034, compared to well over a trillion if they were stopped at a later date. The decision will require a change in legislation, though, as current support for existing renewable sources is guaranteed for 20 years.
The Czech Republic's claims on other countries totaled 22.35 billion crowns at the end of 2011 compared to 21.95 billion the year before, according to a finance ministry report submitted to the government today. The report states that foreign countries repaid around 123 million in debt to the Czech Republic over the course of 2011. Cuba, which refuses to hold talks on its debt, was the biggest debtor, with more than 6.5 billion owed from civilian loans. Other big debtors include Iraq, former Yugoslavian countries, Russia and Sudan. Debt from special secret loans amounted to more than 6.1 billion at the end of last year. Special loans to cover supplies of military material, for instance, have been provided to Libya and Cuba.
Many thanks to Daniela Lazarova. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. In the Czech Republic, and increasingly even abroad, violinist Pavel Sporzl enjoys the kind of name recognition that some aspiring rock stars dream of. A natural talent, he became the enfant terrible of the classical music world when he first arrived on the scene, foregoing a tuxedo for a bandana and taking an interactive approach to his concerts. Having toured the world over and recorded roughly a dozen albums, 36-year-old Pavel Sporzl is not only a dominant but a defining force in classical music. I met Pavel as he was preparing for a concert and asked him to describe what it is that made him and his career so distinct.
Well, first of all, really, I always try to play the best violin I could. I was thinking of doing the violin or concert business a little bit in different way than usual. So I decided not to play in tails. I played just in trousers and shirt and took a bandana around my head. And I tried to be as close as the young public as possible. I wanted to show them that actually young person can also play classical music, and that they don't have to be worried to go to the concerts, and they don't have to be worried to listen to the classical music. And I think that's what made the difference. Now I don't play in bandana anymore, but I have a blue violin. Again, a thing which I try to a little bit in my way change the classical scene, you know. And I think that's the thing which makes me different. That's what I want to do.
And so you started very, very young. Can you tell me something about how your relationship to music developed over the many years?
Well, I always loved the classical music. Actually, we listened to it in our home. We also listened some pop music like Beatles or ABBA. But the major thing in my family was the classical music. And since I was five, I listened to it, and I loved it, and I still love it.
But did that love like change, grow deeper, evolve over the years, or would you still say it's kind of a childish love?
No, of course it deepened. As every other child, I loved very fast compositions. You know, nowadays I like even the slower ones. So of course it developed, and I listened to more recordings and more compositions. So when I was little, I knew mostly Tchaikovsky and Dvořák, and now of course I know many, many more composers. I play a lot of stuff of new music, the 20th century's music, and of course it developed like I developed myself.
You've done a lot of work with children, and you've gotten a lot of good reactions for what you've done with young listeners. Can you tell me about how you got involved in that, and give me a couple examples of your method of teaching?
I have no method. I always try to show young people that the classical music is really nice, that they don't have to be bored of listening to it. I do a lot of, let's say, educational concert. When I was in school, I went to these educational concerts, and I hated them, even although I was a violinist and was supposed to be very quiet and listen to the concert. I was the worst from my school, because I hated it. They just came there and they play some music and explained nothing, and it was so boring, really. So I tried it. I thought of changing it. I tried to talk to the students. I asked them a few questions about the music. I tried to get them involved in the concert so that it's not really just listening and boring for them. Plus, sometimes I bring another violin. I ask them if someone wants to try to play the violin, and always somebody wants. So he goes on the stage and we play some duo. He just plays the open strings, and I play some melody, you know, above. And these students who play the violin, he's like a hero in the school, you know, for 2 weeks, that everybody just adores him in the school. So that's another way of just getting really attention of these students and showing them that it can be even fun to play or listen to classical music.
I think, I don't know that you have a special relationship in particular with Dvořák, no?
I do. I actually recorded all of his compositions for violin as a solo instrument. So I recorded his concerto and all of the compositions for violin and piano. But, of course, as a Czech musician, I'm sort of forced to have a nice relationship with Czech composers. I try to play them as much as possible, because, who could play them better than Czech musician? It's not only me; it's every Czech musicians, of course, feel the best way how to play the Czech composers. It's not the only way, but it's the Czech way. Dvořák had the incredible sense of melody making. If you listen to Dvořák for 10-15 seconds, you know it immediately. It's a Dvořák's music. It was very hard for him to compose. he was walking around the room for many, many hours and maybe many, many days before he knew that the one melody he just made was the right one. It was really, really hard business for him to make his compositions. So I think even to know that his compositions are very, let's say, simple. It's very great to and very easy to listen to it, but it's not simple in the bad way. I mean, all of the people in the world can really easily sit down and listen to his beautiful melodies. It's hard to explain in words. You have to listen, and you get in love with it.
You recognized Dvořák immediately after the first few strains, of course, but I also wanted to ask you if you can differentiate between who's playing.
Nowadays, because you can listen to all of your colleagues immediately, the personality somehow doesn't exist in such a big way as before. So it's much harder to recognize these days who is really playing. But if you listen very carefully, you can. But really, 50-100 years ago, like, or 50 years ago, Jascha Heifetz was an incredible violinist. You listen two notes and you immediately know it was Jascha Heifetz. Today, it's hard to say in two notes who's playing.
It's the dream of every American musician to study in the old world. You studied in the new world, you studied in America for 4 years, I think, and I wanted to ask if you could compare and contrast the experiences of studying in old Europe and in America.
It was a dream of every East European musician to go to study to America. Before the World War II, most of the Jews went to the States or to America. They flew. So all of the best teachers were there, and they made a unique way of teaching. So the teacher is the most important person, and every teacher is different. If you talk of American teacher or a European teacher, there is no European way of teaching, and there is no really American way. It's the teacher's way. You can, of course, you can find great teachers in Europe, and you can find great teachers in America. I think in America you simply want a big sound more than in Europe. I think in Europe you want more the details, the musicality. In America it's more like I don't know, trumpet way of playing in the good way, not in the bad way, of course, because simply you have big halls and everybody in the hall wants to hear your sound. I would say that's the main difference as I see it.
We play a song at the end of this program, and when I was sifting through your work to try to find a song that would really be exemplary of your talent and your taste, I realized that's a question that's best left to you. Is there one piece that really speaks to you, really touches you absolutely more than anything else, or is there something that you've really had a close relationship to ever since your childhood?
There's one piece of Dvořák which I listened to it since I was very, very little, and that's in one of the Dvořák CDs. It's called Mazurek. It has 5 minutes, so if you can squeeze it there, play Mazurek.
That was violinist Pavel Sporzel ending that edition of The Arts, first broadcast in March of 2009. Topping off our show now for today is the next edition of our language learning series, The ABCs of Czech.
Ahoy, and welcome to ABC of Czech. I'm Heather Bowne, and I'm here in the studio with
Dita Sidu.
Today we're continuing our study of Czech shoes.
České boty.
Paying close attention to which shoes are worn in which weather. When it's raining in the Czech Republic, some people wear
holinky
and others wear
gumáky
or
gumovky.
Can you guess what they wear? You got it. Rubber boots, rain boots, or galoshes, depending on your preference. Just like English, Czech has different ways of referring to boots that are worn when it's wet out.
Holinky
is the older word referring to boots that cover your shins.
Holenie.
But today,
holinky
are just rain boots.
Gumáky
is the newer word, and it refers to the material that the shoes are made of, rubber or
guma
in Czech. The word
gumovky
is also used and is obviously related to
gumáky.
While there doesn't tend to be a lot of snow,
sníh,
in Prague, it does snow,
sněží,
on the countryside and in the mountains. When it's snowing, Czechs wear
sněhule,
snow boots, derived from the word for snow. And by the way, the Czech for the fairy tale character Snow White is
sněhurka.
Both rain shoes and snowshoes traditionally would be called overshoes,
přezůvky,
which comes from the verb
přezout se,
to change one kind of shoe into another. Today, however, this word for overshoes,
přezůvky,
can be used to refer to sports shoes as well, which certainly makes sense because how often do we wear rain shoes or snowshoes as only overshoes anymore? A lot of people have taken to
tenisky,
trainers, running shoes, runners, tennis shoes, or sneakers, depending on where you're from. And here and there, you may find people wearing
pohorky,
walking or hiking shoes, because in the Czech Republic,
pohorky
are usually worn when walking in the mountains.
Pohorách.
Athletes, depending on the discipline, also have special shoes. Football players wear
kopačky,
derived from the verb to kick.
Kopat.
So football players in the Czech Republic wear little kickers. Shoes that are made especially for running and have spikes on the bottom are called
tretry.
Basic exercise shoes are called
cvičky,
from the verb to exercise.
Cvičit.
While anyone can wear
cvičky,
the general association with the word is small canvas shoes worn by young girls. That's all for today. I hope you've learned some more about Czech shoes and especially which shoes to ask for in which weather. Until next time.
Naschledanou.
Bye-bye.
Ciao, ciao.
That was the ABCs of Czech, wrapping up Radio Prague's English broadcast for today. Don't forget that this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz. If you have any questions or comments, we are always happy to hear them. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.